Hello, this is Bob Kruger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Thought for Food. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. So here we have Thought for Food for April 2011. This month of April, we'll observe two great traditional religious celebrations. Passover begins on the 19th, and Easter Sunday will be on the 24th. All of we who observe these holidays have expectations of the food that will be served as a part of the special times of the year. What are you looking forward to? In early March, North Carolina Agriculture Commissioner Steve Troxler went to China on a trade mission with representatives of the state's cotton, peanut, soybean, and tobacco farmers. China has grown in importance to North Carolina farmers. Last year, more than $542 million worth of North Carolina agricultural products were bought in China, up from $271 million worth in 2008. The country is expecting to soon become North Carolina's largest market for agricultural exports. In addition to meeting with buyers, Troxler will open a North Carolina trade center in Beijing, which will serve North Carolina companies that already do business in China and develop new leads for agriculture commodities. It will be the state's second trade office in China. The first is in Shanghai. The state also has trade offices in Hong Kong, Japan, Europe, Mexico, Brazil, and Canada. According to a news release issued by the department, a grant from the Tobacco Trust Fund covered some of the transportation and other expenses of the trade mission. Last month, we mentioned some American firms that are doing well in China. Let's admit it. Attempts to make ice cream healthier by deleting fat and sugar didn't work, at least not for true ice cream lovers. But rather than taking stuff out, what if you would add an array of healthy ingredients to ice cream without wrecking it in the process? Researchers at the University of Missouri Columbus are in the final throes of taste testing their multifunction ice cream, a name that makes it clear that these are food scientists and not marketing wizards. Food chemist Ingolf Gruen know that he and his team are in touchy territory. Americans love ice cream and eat lots of it. By adding four components, antioxidants, dietary fiber, probiotics, and prebiotics, the scientist thinks they have hit on something. Adding probiotics or good bacteria to food products is hot right now, though experts caution that some health claims need to be scrutinized. Whether their fruit-flavored, full-fat ice cream will ever go commercial isn't known, but it might be available this summer at Buck's Ice Cream Place, the Missouri College of Agriculture's shop. Food is all about taste, Gruen said, adding, "We do a lot of sensory studies in our department." These trials are led by a doctoral candidate who got hooked on an idea more than 2 years ago on the idea of ice cream with a larger purpose. The folks at Missouri Columbus are aware of the potential criticism that good-for-you ice cream could promote overconsumption. The other way to look at it is, if you're going to occasionally indulge, a treat might as well have some healthy additions. Ice cream is high fat compared with other foods, so moderate eating is still very important, they say. The challenges of adding something to ice cream have been many. It turns out that ice cream is easy to mess up. Besides taste, there's texture, and even the way it behaves in your mouth. It shouldn't be sticky, gummy, gooey, or watery. Adding dietary fiber wasn't too difficult, except to determine how much would be included without altering flavor and texture. The proper amount seemed to be equivalent to 15% of the recommended daily intake. Many Americans consume about half of the recommended fiber in a day. It will be interesting to learn if this sort of ice cream ever makes it to the mainstream market. Many of us walk as a means of exercise, and walking is recommended by many health experts. Walking has become the most popular exercise among Americans, and with good reason. It's easy, convenient, and natural. This low-impact activity makes walking an excellent exercise for beginners. Walking 20 to 30 minutes a day, just three times a week, can yield enormous benefits for your body, especially when combined with healthy eating. Walking also strengthens the bones, tones muscles, fosters weight loss, decreases stress and tension, and helps you sleep better. walking the right way can help you move faster and more smoothly, as well as give you better health, fitness, and attitude. Walking the wrong way can lead to wasted effort or even injury. One thing is overstriding. When walkers try to walk faster, a natural inclination is to lengthen the stride in front, reaching out further with the forward foot. This leads to a clumsy, ungainly gait, striking hard with the feet. Your shins may hurt, and you really don't get any faster. All of the power of your walk comes from pushing with the back leg and foot. If you're trying to walk fast, concentrate on taking shorter, quicker steps. Then think of easy, really rolling with your steps with your back foot and leg, getting a good push off. The result will be faster feet and lengthening your stride where it does some good. An unnatural arm swing. If you keep your arms still at your sides while walking or swing them without bending them, you will notice your hands tend to swell quite a bit. Long, straight arms act like a pendulum, slowing you down. A normal walking motion uses the arms to counterbalance the leg motion. A walker can add power and speed by using the arms effectively. Bend your arms 90 degrees and swing them naturally back and forth opposite the leg motion. Not drinking enough water. If you don't drink sufficient water before and during and after walking, you may experience cramping and fatigue. Drink a glass of water every hour throughout the day to stay hydrated. 10 minutes after your walk, drink a glass of water. During your walk, drink more water every 20 minutes. And after you finish walking, drink a glass or two of water. Avoid caffeinated beverages before you walk, as they can cause you to lose fluid and make you thirstier. Keep on walking. The other white meat has a new slogan. The National Pork Board has replaced the decades-old ad campaign with a message, "Pork, be inspired." Board officials say that after 25 years, it's time to move on from the old message that compared pork to chicken. Instead, try to increase sales by focusing on the estimated 82 million who already eat pork. The overall goal is to move sales of our products, said C.C. Snyder, the Des Moines, Iowa-based vice president of marketing. We want to increase pork sales by 10% by 2014. To do that, we need to make a stronger connection to our product. Pork sales total about $117 per person in 2010. Pork consumption averages about 50 pounds per person per year, according to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Snyder said research done by the Pork Board shows that 28% of American households make up nearly 70% of the nation's at-home consumption of fresh pork. A new campaign is aimed at getting existing pork consumers to think more about how they can incorporate it into their meal planning. We want to move that needle, go after that core group of consumers, she said. These people love pork, know how to prepare it, and are eager to share recipes. The new marketing effort marks the end to a ubiquitous advertising slogan launched in 1987 to convince consumers that pork was healthy and had fewer calories than most people thought. The campaign stemmed a decline in pork consumption. Snyder said, times have changed, and with consumption continuing to be flat, Snyder says it's time to take pork in a new direction. Pork remains behind beef and chicken in consumption, according to the USDA. Americans ate about 61 pounds of beef per capita last year and about 80 pounds of chicken. While beef production has been gradually declining and pork consumption has remained about the same, chicken consumption has increased in the past two decades, the USDA data shows. More than 31 billion pounds of pork were produced in the U.S. in 2010, according to the Pork Board. Iowa is the nation's top pork producer, followed by North Carolina and Minnesota. The old slogan remained on the Pork Board's website and on apparel sold by the board, but Internet searches for pork, the other white meat, will direct people to the new campaign, Snyder said. Gail Carter, a partner at Schaefer, Condon, Carter, the Chicago-based ad agency that helped develop the new campaign, said, pork, the other white meat, succeeded in creating awareness of pork as an option to chicken. Now it's time to update the message. There's no need to rely on comparison for this audience, she said. We know more about who the target is and how to talk to them in more up-to-date terms. The board will spend more than $11 million to roll out the campaign in March and April. It will include national print and broadcast advertising, public relations, social media, and food servicing marketing. Online advertising begins March 7th, and national TV ads will begin April 11th. Print ads will also begin running in food and lifestyle publications in April. John Mabry, the director of the Iowa Pork Industry Center at Iowa State University, said pork, the other white meat campaign, helped pork overcome an image that it was fatty and helped increase the ways in which pork is used. I can see them trying to expand on the market, he said. We are exporting 25% of our product now. We need to maintain the export market, but also to ramp up consumption here in the United States. Through the National Pork Checkoff Program, pork producers invest 40 cents per $100 value of the hog sold to fund research and promotion of pork. For the past 3 years, American consumers have been on a shopping diet. They have cut non-essentials from their shopping list. They have made do. They thought twice before buying, and yet they continue to open their wallet for natural and organic products. Many shoppers say that natural and organic items remain on their shopping list because they're concerned about their health, the environment, America's agribusiness, or all three. It's that dedication that has made organics a bright spot for many retailers and is allowing some to expand. Trader Joe's, the California-based grocery known for its array of foods without preservatives, additives, or other unnatural ingredients, has opened 3 Triangle stores in the last 5 years. And Whole Foods, the granddaddy of the organic grocery stores, just opened a new store in North Raleigh. The commitment to organics has surprised some who predicted that on the outset of the recession that penny-pinching consumers would avoid such high-priced items. I think that a lot of organics are bought by a higher demographic that's a little above average and not as impacted by the economy as other economic groups, says Brian Todd, the president of the Food Institute, a New Jersey group that studies food prices. Yet despite the ongoing pressure on some shoppers' budgets, the results are clear. Last year, overall sales for groceries were up a modest 1.8%, according to the Food Institute. Yet sales of organic items more than doubled that rate of growth, up 4.4% in the 52 weeks ending February 20th, according to Symphony IRI in Chicago. Shoppers like Chris Kirschbaum are behind those figures. Kirschbaum, who lives in Greensboro, drives to Raleigh once or twice a month to stock up on natural and organic items at Whole Foods. She uses coupons when she shops and says she's learned to live frugally when she was a graduate student making $1,000 a month. Said a healthy diet is her number one priority. It's just a health issue, she said. This is where I choose to spend my money. Part of the reason sales are staying strong is that organic products are more widely available in the past. Taking note of the success of chains such as Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, major grocery store chains took a gamble by bulking up on organics rather than holding back. Grocery chains from Harris Teeter to Walmart have added large organic sections, amped up by the number of locally grown products they offer and add did store brand natural and organic items. That comes on top of a shift in the product manufacturing world, with large consumer product companies from Kraft to Procter & Gamble introducing more natural selections. Harris Teeter now stocks nearly 800 organic items, said the chain's been in substantial growth in organic sales over the past few years. Still, some believe the demand for natural and organic products may have hit its peak. Kurt Jetta is president of a Connecticut consumer research firm called the Tabs Group. His recent research shows that the percentage of shoppers who bought natural or organic items remained steady in the 38% to 39% range for the past 3 years. It's the number of retailers carrying natural and organic items and the number of products each is stocking that adds to the impression that organic sales are exploding. All these retailers are getting on board and expanding their selections and having these big offerings, he said. That's a big explosion in inventory. The retailers have gotten on the hype a bit too much. Plus, he says, the fact that an item is natural or organic is just not that impressive to shoppers anymore. There will always be this core of committed people, he said. That's why Whole Foods and similar stores continue to grow, but we expect that to turn and retailers to start weeding down. Although product labeling can be confusing, natural and organic do not mean the same thing. Organic refers to items that are produced, manufactured, and handled using organic means and certified by agencies such as the United States Department of Agriculture. The USDA also has different levels of organic certification, from 100% organic to made with organic ingredients, which means the product is made of at least 70% organic ingredients. Natural refers to food items that are not chemically or synthesized. These are generally from plants and animals. Last month, I told you of an enterprising 8-year-old who was one of 5 finalists in Jif's most creative peanut butter sandwich contest. She had won $2,500 toward her college fund, and the grand prize was a $25,000 scholarship. Margalit Mermelstein, who lives in North Raleigh, had already won 10 state fair ribbons. We have just learned that Margalit won the grand prize with her Wushu chicken tacos. She and her mother made the trip to New York, where the judging took place. Her mom and dad have won many ribbons at the North Carolina State Fair, and it would seem that some of their expertise have rubbed off on their daughter. We add our congratulations to this unusual young lady. We also hope there'll be a chance for us to sample her prize-winning tacos. Hardee's, the fast food chain known for its monster-sized burgers with eye-popping calorie counts, is starting to sell a turkey burger that's a little more diet-conscious. This move makes Hardee the first major burger chain to permanently add a turkey burger to the menu. Buddy Noel Enterprises, the Hardee's franchisee for this region, introduced the burgers recently in his hometown of Rocky Mount. In North Carolina, there are about 240 Hardee restaurants, including 25 in the Triangle. They offer 3 varieties in their stores, according to Chief Marketing Officer Jerry Albrook. In addition to a traditional version with tomato, lettuce, and all of the normal toppings, there will be a barbecue ranch version and one with mushroom and Swiss cheese. Prices will range from $2.99 to $3.49. They will be served on whole wheat buns. Hardee's, which has come under fire for burgers with more than 1,000 calories, is seeking a different appetite with turkey burgers that are less than 500 calories. There are young, hungry guys who still try to eat healthy, and this gives them a great reason to come to Hardee's, Albrook said. It should appeal to women as well. But Hardee's main market is younger men, and it has targeted them in the past few years with sometimes scandalous ads that have featured Paris Hilton and other female celebrities. The new turkey burger ads continue that tradition. Some ads for the sandwich will feature Miss Turkey from last year's Miss Universe pageant. Most of us drink a soft drink now and then. Most of us have a favorite soda. Would you like to learn how your favorite compares with the nation's favorite? These figures come from the trade publication, The Beverage Digest, for the year 2010. The big news is that Diet Coke has topped Pepsi-Cola for the first time and become the second most popular soft drink in the country behind Coca-Cola. It marks a victory for the Coca-Cola company, as its sodas now hold the top 2 spots, beating out its longtime rival Pepsi-Cola. Diet Cola's rise reflects a long-term trend toward diet sodas. 10 years ago, only 2 of the top 10 were diet sodas. Now 4 of the top 10 are on the list, including diet versions of Coke, Pepsi, Mountain Dew, and Dr. Pepper. Coca-Cola sold nearly 927 million cases of its diet soda in 2010 to Pepsi's 892 million cases. Regular Coke remains far and away the most popular soda, selling 1.6 billion cases. Overall, U.S. soft drink sales have fallen for 6 straight years as consumers switch to healthier alternatives such as juices and tea and cut spending in the recession. Though both Diet Coke and Pepsi sold less soda in 2010, the decline was more pronounced for Pepsi. The downward trend in U.S. soda sales puts pressure on the beverage companies to compete. Coca-Cola pumped its traditional advertising, including online ads. Pepsi-Cola, which has lost market share in recent years, maintained some traditional ads, but also steered dollars toward its Pepsi Refresh project, an online donation program meant to build brand awareness. Some have questioned whether it actually drives sales. Coca-Cola sold 0.5% less soda in 2010, while PepsiCo fell 2.6%. Does this remind you of anyone in your kitchen? You know the drill. You're stirring along, and suddenly the spoon's in your mouth, and oh my, you've managed to gollop a wallop of red sauce. Or maybe it's the beater dripping chocolate batter now being licked from your lips. Let's face it, folks. Spoons and forks by the side of our stoves, they're party to the culinary crime of shoving down a half a meal before we get to the table. Oh, sure, we know chefs swear by it, but even the best of them acknowledge there's a whopping difference between tasting one teaspoon, that's really all you need, and standing basically scarfing down dinner one spoonful at a time. We call them BLTs, bites, licks, and tastes, said Stephanie Rost, a director at Weight Watchers International. And they're not to be slipped under the table. For starters, you need to track every one, Rost says. If it helps, write down each time you taste. Be sure to count them in your daily intake. If not, it's not as if they melt away just because you're upright and not using a plate. Use preventive strikes. Do your cooking during one afternoon and then just reheat and eat so there's less temptation. Pop a mint in your mouth when you're cooking. Chop up raw veggies and munch them instead. Then consider these numbers. Cake batter, one lick, 65 calories. Red sauce with ground beef, one spoonful, 80 calories. That handful of shredded cheese, oh gee, 100 calories. Have you seen that cereal commercial on TV that makes a big pitch about tasting good, not tasting like cardboard? And we often are reminded we need a good bit of fiber in our diets. The next time you read a label on a food product, you will notice the grams of fiber per serving are included. There's fiber in most foods of plant origin, including fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds. Some are particularly concentrated sources. Beans such as pintos, garbanzos, black beans, and navy beans, for example, contain a whopping 16 grams of dietary fiber per cup. That's half the amount of fiber most adults need in a day. Bran cereals can contain close to the same amount of fiber per cup. Focus on boosting your intake of these ingredients in your meals, and your fiber intake will rise as well. And here are some ideas that Sivan Havilah-Hobbs suggested to increase one's fiber intake. Bean up. Not surprisingly, she says, I add beans to a lot of my meals. Start with beans in your soup. Go all the way and eat all bean soup, black bean or navy bean soup, for example. Add garbanzos to salads and eat more hummus and beans with rice. Eat baked beans on toast and overbaked potatoes. Fix big batches of 3 and 4 bean salads they keep for several days. Spread the wheat bran around. Mix bran flake cereal and all bran-type cereals with other varieties. For example, mix bran cereals with other flake cereals, granola and Cheerios. Use bran cereals to make bran muffins and cookies. Double up. Double your portion of vegetables and salads with your meals. Aim for eating at least 2 pieces of fruit every day. Push those fiber foods in the center of the plate and push the portions up. At the same time, push to the edge of the plate the foods with no fiber, including meat and dairy products. Use them as minor ingredients in your meals, treating them like condiments rather than the main course. And while you're at it, drink plenty of fluids. Suzanne, thank you for your suggestions. Kathleen Purvis, who is food editor of the Charlotte Observer, recently wrote an article about meal planning, and I'll share it with you now. What are you having for dinner tonight? If that question throws you into panic, you may be missing a secret weapon, the meal plan. The point comes up every time I talk to a nutrition or consumer expert. You want to eat better? You want to lose weight? You want to save money? Cut waste? Relax and generally enjoy your life with less work? Make a meal plan. It's one habit actually can help you accomplish all of these things. Andrea Weigel at the News and Observer recently ran a contest to give away a copy of Suzanne Nicholson's new book, 7-Day Menu Planner for Dummies. She asked people to tell her why they needed it. Andrea was so overcome by the entries, she shared them with me. Thumbing through the stack, I was touched by people's desire to gain control, and I was also puzzled. Why do we make it so difficult? Maybe it's because, like cooking, I hear from people all the time who think they can't cook because they can't produce a cordon bleu worthy five-course dinner while standing on their heads. But cooking doesn't have to mean gourmet cooking. Preparing a simple meal from fresh ingredients is all it takes to call yourself a cook. Has meal planning become something that sounds complicated? Have you read too many tips from Uber organizers who make it sound like you have to create a 16-day plan of recipes cross-referenced with shopping lists arranged by aisle and sale? Sure, you can do that. Or you can skip that, sit down once a week, glance at your calendar, and make a quick list of what you're doing for dinner Monday through Friday. That's a meal plan. I do it on Saturday, she says. While the house is still quiet, I go to the farmer's market early, pick up what looks freshest and most enticing. Then I come home, jot a quick list of what I bought and what I already have. I pour a cup of coffee and sit for a few minutes. I think about the week and plug in who's going where and who needs to eat early when. And then I make a fast list, protein, starch, side dishes. The main dish might be a printed recipe, or it might be as simple as chicken with pasta, something I'll make up when the time comes. We keep a running shopping list on the refrigerator, so I top it off with what I need for the meal plan. And that's it. Done. Follow the recipe. There's a warning to my son, who sometimes yelps that he's expecting meatballs on Tuesday that don't show up until Thursday. Life isn't set in stone, buddy boy. Yes, things change, but most nights I come home, step into the kitchen, put my brain on autopilot while I go through the familiar rhythm of cooking. 5 minutes, a piece of paper, calm. Is it really too much? I wonder if she's talking to my household. And another letter to the food editor. The question was, I could use a good, quick, healthful recipe for cooking vegetables. Any suggestions? And the answer on the surface sounds like a tall order. And there are dozens of vegetables, and they're all very different. But there are a couple of approaches that work with almost any vegetable, from asparagus to zucchini. And she says, I call the first one pan braising. Trim the vegetables and cut into large but still bite-sized pieces, place in a skillet with a scant quarter cup of water, about 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and any season you like, salt, pepper, dried herbs. Cover the skillet and bring to a boil. Cook maybe 2 or 3 minutes for a light green vegetable and bring to a boil. Cook maybe 2 or 3 minutes for a light green vegetable like broccoli or greens, a little longer for something more dense like winter squash or root vegetables. You want the vegetables to be fork tender. Remove the lid and continue cooking for a few minutes till the water boils away and what is left is oil flavored with the vegetables' juices. Stir fry for a minute and serve. And the second method is roasting, which adds sweetness. And she cuts the vegetables up and puts them in the oven and stirs a couple of times to keep them from sticking. And I think that we have about run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen the same time next month. We hope you're enjoying it. And I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And the content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. And so long until next time.